Have you ever considered what an odd artifact a sermon is? I preach, you listen. Think about it. That's odd because you probably don't do anything quite like that at any other time of the week. It's odd. It's odd even for Sunday morning. I don't know what your Sunday morning routine is. I get up early. I slip an IV of coffee in a vein, and I read the morning papers. I read the news. I want new news. Were the headlines of the Washington Post to announce Lee surrenders at Appomattox? That's old news. We want new news. Want to know how the Washington Nationals did last night? They won in Atlanta 5-2. And you could read about that this morning, less than 8 hours after the last pitch was thrown. That's new news. Read the news, clean up, come to worship. In worship, we read the scriptures, ancient writings. The passage we just heard Jim read from 1 Corinthians is one of the more recent contributions from about the year 55, give or take a year. Which makes it 1956 years old. That's old. That's really old news. Now, isn't that a curious thing? Isn't that odd? Have you read anything, except for the Bible, anything else this week that is 20 centuries old? I mean, how can that possibly be relevant? How can it be useful to you? Checking your BlackBerry for last night's messages? That's reasonable. Going to church to hear messages 20 centuries old makes people wonder. It's silly, odd, foolish. That's what Paul calls it. The Apostle Paul calls it foolishness. We are about some very odd things here as we gather for worship. Well, think about it. The National Presbyterian Church is a large enterprise with a large budget, a large staff, an enormous program, and a lot of complexity. We've been adding staff recently. Think about it. We could have just gone a couple of blocks down Nebraska Avenue and gotten ourselves an MBA from American University. That would be relevant. That would be practical. George Washington University offers a master's in tourism administration with specialties in hospitality management and event and meeting management. With all the meetings and events that we have around here, wouldn't that sort of education be helpful for keeping all the customers happy? George Mason University awards PhDs and MAs through its Institute for Conflict Analysis and Resolution. Wouldn't that be useful at the National Presbyterian Church? This morning in our worship, we welcome Dr. Quinn Fox as a colleague in ministry. Quinn did his PhD at Vanderbilt University, wrote his dissertation on the 19th century German theologian Friedrich Schleiermacher. Baseball had its all-star game last week. If there was a theological all-star team, there's no doubt about it, Schleiermacher would be on it. But mention Schleiermacher most places in Washington, D.C., and they're going to think you're talking about a German beer. And that is the foolishness that we are about here in worship. We're dealing with useless, impractical information. The foolishness is not ours alone. The foolishness erupts when we read the scriptures. Paul's first letter to the Corinthians makes it clear. At the heart of the matter is the cross. That is what we preach and teach and live and serve. The problem, of course, is the foolishness of the cross. And that's embarrassing. It's awkward. Even as I wrote that sentence I just said a minute ago, that is what we preach and teach and live and serve, I caught myself wondering, now how am I going to sell that on Sunday morning? And there's the problem. The cross is unsellable. It's unmanageable. It's unappealing. As information, it's practically useless. It's a lot of foolishness. Plain and simple, as Paul himself admits, the cross is foolishness. No one wants the cross. People want a better church. They want a church that provides more services, more activities, more fellowship, more excitement. And all of the hopes regarding the future of the National Presbyterian Church, has anyone stood up and said, we want the cross? One church growth expert says that preachers spend too much time worrying about the Bible and theology. Just say something helpful, he says. Preach something useful, practical, something relevant. Paul says that when he came preaching among the Corinthians, he decided to know nothing among us except Christ and him crucified. Is it any wonder that the Corinthian church is in turmoil? Paul's words highlight the problem because the cross is not useful, or at least not useful to us. The cross does not fit our plans, does not accommodate itself to our agenda. The cross has no form or comeliness that we should desire. It is irrelevant, useless, foolish. According to the wisdom of our world, it has absolutely nothing to offer us. Or perhaps it offers us precisely everything because it is useless, irrelevant, and foolish. Irrelevant news. A lot of foolishness. These are the news bulletins that are announced weekly in our worship. They are not phrased in the common language of our world's wisdom. The world's wisdom cracks open when it tries to come to terms with the cross. Instead of practical knowledge, what we find here is so strange and so different from anything else we hear during the week that we just might have to spend our entire lives trying to come to terms with it and understand it. The wisdom the world provides us offers counsel on how to spend our lives, how to arrange our lives, how to enjoy our lives. The foolishness of the gospel, on the other hand, tells us that our lives are not our own to own and enjoy, arrange and spend. Sometimes people ask, what do Presbyterians believe? One great answer to that question comes from a brief statement of faith. In life and death, we belong to God. That's borrowed from the Heidelberg Catechism up here on the stained glass window, which in turn borrows it from the Apostle Paul, who wrote, if we live, we live to the Lord. If we die, we die to the Lord. So then, whether we live or whether we die, we are the Lord's. In this lesson from 1 Corinthians that Jim read, Paul writes, God is the source of your life in Christ Jesus. That in life and in death we belong to God is well attested in the Scriptures, and it is central to our Reformed tradition. There's just one problem with it, and that is, what can you do with information like that? It's not terribly practical. Here in worship, we read Jesus' teachings with stained glass voices so that we might forget how zany they really are. Here's a treasure hidden in a field that someone found and buried again and then sold everything to possess. This treasure is so vast, so compelling, that the finder gives up everything, including things like honesty and ethics and the observance of laws regarding found property, to purchase that field where the treasure is hidden. And if that story's not outrageous enough, the one that follows it, here's a pearl merchant who sells everything to purchase one pearl of incomparable value. And that sounds wonderfully pious and religious until we stop and think about it. What kind of shrewd pearl dealer is this who now has one pearl and nothing else to do business with. It's crazy. It's impractical. It's foolishness. We are intimately involved in this foolishness, the foolishness of the cross, because it is in this foolishness we discover who we truly are. This foolishness whispers secrets like, you are a pilgrim in the world on your way to a celestial city whose architect and builder are God. You are not just the lawyer, teacher, administrator, or merchant that this world names you to be. You are a wayfarer and a journeyer to God. You are not just mother, father, son, or daughter that your family knows you to be. You are God's own child, anticipating a grand homecoming with celebrations absolutely unimaginable. You are God's fabulous secret. John the Elder in his epistle tells us breathlessly, what we will be has not yet been revealed. And in Colossians, the apostle says, your life is hidden with Christ in God. Hidden. And then, St. John the Divine in the book of Revelation says that at the end, Christ will give you a white stone. And on the white stone is written a new name that no one knows. You have a name that you do not know. But God knows. And so you will know it. And here in worship, we ponder over secrets like that. But one thing this foolishness is not is useful. What can you do with this stuff? It's just not practical. Go down here to the SunTrust Bank on Wisconsin. Fill out a mortgage application. On the line that asks for other outstanding obligations, write in life and in death, I belong to God. See if you get the loan. When you interview for a new position and the interviewer asks you what you're looking for, hoping for, say, I am searching for a treasure so vast and compelling that I would surrender everything, absolutely everything for that treasure. And afterwards we can talk about how that interview went. Go out to Reagan International Airport or Reagan National Airport. When the ticket agent requests your identification and asks you where you're going, explain, I am a pilgrim journeying to the celestial city whose architect and builder is God, and who I am has not yet been revealed. And see how long it takes for security to come over. I do not know why you are laughing about this. You pay me to deal in foolishness like this. It's impractical. It's not useful. But why is it that with 80, 120, 200 channels on television, we come here in hope of hearing useless information? Gathering in Christian worship is a strange business. We come here yearning after useless information, craving foolishness. The novelist Walker Percy evoked the oddness of what we are about in his parable of the castaway. Suppose you are a castaway on an island, says Percy. You wake up on the beach with no memory of who you are and no recollection of where you come from. All you know is that you find yourself cast up on the beach. But your island is a pleasant place. A remarkable culture with developed social institutions, good university, first-class science and medicine, flourishing art and industry. The natives receive you hospitably, and you make the best of the situation. You get a job. You make a living. You raise a family, and as the phrase goes, become a useful member of the community. To do so, you study and you learn the local customs. To make your way on this island, you give your attention to the knowledge and news of the island, relevant information. Island news is news relevant to your survival and prosperity on the island. It's knowledge relevant to life as being a member of that society. And you need that kind of news and information to make a happy, satisfying home on the island. Yet even so, you do not feel at home. In spite of all you learn, all you know, all the information you gather, something's missing. You might say that you feel homesick, except you have invested yourself, your whole life, in fashioning a home on that island. But island news and island information cannot erase your remembering always that you are a castaway and a stranger who, in spite of a lifetime of island information and learning, is as homeless now as the day you were cast up on the beach. So, on your days off, you go down to the shore and you do some beach combing, looking, searching for what? You look for a message in a bottle, for news from across the sea. You don't ignore the island news, but you walk the beaches nonetheless, looking for something else, something more. You look for a message in a bottle, for news that is not simply island news, but some word that might hint who you truly are and where you come from and where you are going and the meaning of this journey we call life. We Presbyterians are the kind of proper people who do our beachcombing in services of worship like this that are built around a table, a font, and a pulpit. Filled to the brim with the wisdom this world gives us, we gather here to bathe in the foolishness of God. We've heard all manner of relevant information from the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal and NPR, from marketing surveys and Gallup polls, from Dr. Phil and Oprah and Emeril Lagasse. We come here yearning for the blessed irrelevance of news from across a vast, unnameable sea. We crave that useless information that before it is done with us, just might make us useful to God and to our neighbor. We hunger for the foolishness of God to save us from all the weary and wearying wisdoms we know so well. The cross of Christ is that foolishness, a stumbling block to some, foolishness to others, but the power of God nonetheless. Were you perhaps expecting me to explain the cross? It cannot be explained. Were you hoping that I would make all of this sound reasonable, logical? That's impossible. As Paul says, God's foolishness is wiser than human strength, than human wisdom. God's weakness is stronger than human strength. When Sergei Diaghilev learned that his collaborator Jean Cocteau was working on a new play, he wrote him saying, "Astonish me. I want you to astonish me." We gather here in hope of being astonished by news from across the sea, telling us who we are and whose we are and how we may finally find our way home. We come here to be astonished by the word of the cross that outshines all our other wisdom and knowledge. We come here to be astonished by the foolishness of God, wiser by far than human wisdom. We come to be astonished with tales of treasure and precious pearls, to be astonished with dreams of glorious cities and joyful homecomings, to be astonished by the winsome secrets of the high and holy foolishness of the gospel. The Apostle Paul assures us that it is by no means foolish, but nothing less than the very wisdom of God that we should embrace the high and holy and glorious foolishness of the cross of Christ. May God bless us with such grand and glorious foolishness.